Nearly 10 minutes to 7, you're on RN Drive with Waleed Ali, and I welcome to the RN Drive microphone for the last time this year a man whose presence on the program has been appreciated by all and sundry. His name is Scott Stevens. He's the editor of the ABC's Religion and Ethics website, and he joins us now. Scott, thank you for your service this year, and thanks for joining us.
My goodness, it's been my pleasure, Willie.
Am I allowed
without exception, it's been a pleasure.
Oh, that's good. There was that one time that we... Anyway, let's not go into that.
Yes.
can I call you mate?
Or what sure, about, yes, well, please.
What about cobber? Someone was telling me that cobber's a great word, a good old Australian term of familiarity, and we should embrace that. Are you happy with that?
Yeah, that's fine with me. It still sounds completely foreign to my ears after all these years, but...
I want to hear you say cobber in that accent.
Not a chance. There is no way. There's no way. Because I just sound like a poser. And anyway.
Look, we nearly got there. Now, Today FM, we've been speaking a lot about this the last day or so. It's cancelled the program, which was hosted briefly by Michael Christian and Mel Grieg. And they've put a halt to their prank calls for the moment. And it raises this question, which we sort of discussed briefly yesterday, about the whole ethos of this prank call thing. And one of the things I suggested was that it's a form of entertainment based on humiliation, and for that reason is sort of a disaster waiting to happen.
Look, I think you're right. One of the things that really does... The whole matter is quite fraught, and I've got no interest in joining in the witch hunt that's been pursuing these two young people who, to be perfectly honest, have been put in a position they never should have been in the first place. And I want to sort of say something, I suppose, in a minute about responsibility. But I do think there is a wider point to be made here, and that's that, you know, many of our finest sociologists for some decades now have been recognizing that the further – especially Western civilization goes down the path of gentrification, politeness, where there is a kind of code that covers over so much of daily life, where there are certain codes of practice and politeness and non-discrimination that we're supposed to live by, that the thing that allows us to behave in these ways is that certain other of our more baser instincts have to be satisfied by other means. So, for instance, our desire for violence has to be sated, but in a manner that's controlled. So that might be sport, that might be boxing, that might be excessively violent films. But at the same time, Waleed, without getting too highbrow about this, you know, ritual humiliation is a vital part. I'm not saying it should be this way, but I'm saying it is this way. Ritual humiliation is a vital part of human civilization or human culture. It always has been. Mm-hmm. Ways of feeling better about ourselves by means of the by means of an exercise of ritual cruelty towards other people within our society. And the way in which we can, you know, get by with not doing that ourselves is by appointing certain people within society to do it for us. And we see it all the time. And especially when it's a radio station like Today FM, I'm not sure if I'm able to say their name online, but especially when it's the radio station in question that has made emotional exploitation a kind of stock in trade. You know, I think in the end, we've allowed this to happen. We sit by and we allow these forms of what can only be called ritual cruelty take place, and we laugh and we giggle, and then there's this awful outpouring of ritual, I would even dare to say feigned outrage, when an awful tragedy like this happens and everyone wrings their hands and asks the regulators to get involved in this. But I do think there is a broader moral practice here that we ought to be addressing.
Well, I want to come in a second to the question of how much that can be held responsible, like how distant a consequence has to be. Or how direct a consequence has to be. I'll get to that in just a second. But it sounds to me from what you're saying that these DJs, not these two, but the whole genre, the guild of these DJs, if that's an appropriate term to use for that sort of profession, that they perform some kind of vicarious function, that they are, in a sense, the representatives for some of the darker things in our collective souls, and that for that reason we perhaps need them, or they perform some kind of social service.
Yes, you're probably taking it a little bit further than I'd be prepared to go. I think what you say is precisely right, and I think in some ways that's a logical extension of what I'm saying. What I'm in fact trying to argue, though, is that is that when human interaction, when society is governed by a series of codes, when it's governed by a kind of politeness where there are certain things that we just don't say about each other, isn't it striking that as soon as you get away from those heavily regulated code-based forms of official interaction, as soon as you get into these unregulated or illegal zones, it might be social media, it might be the smoko room, whatever you like, you know, that same unreconstructed, bigoted, misogynist, racist, smutty aspect of human life, it just erupts right back to the fore. And so, I mean, my sense here is that the right response to this isn't we need a tightening of the code, or we need a serious or punitive reinforcement of the code that already exists here. I think the deeper question is, you know, can a form of repressive morality, repressive politeness that kind of drapes over Western culture, is that really enough?
Well, I reckon it does work, actually, Scott. I reckon it does, because when you've seen the restrictions that have started to be placed, for example, on racist humour, we have seen a corresponding decline and then a change in social attitude so that people understand over time this isn't appropriate. That it does, it becomes normative, I reckon.
It does become normative, but only after a really, really intense and often sometimes extremely fraught and even violent period of resentment. It's almost as though we are being told what to believe, told what to think in the privacy of our own brains. And I think, I mean, again, I think that's how moral formation works. When you don't have a corresponding idea of the good that you hold in front of people, the only way to begin challenging certain perceptions, certain ways and habits of behavior, is by this kind of imposed normativity, to use your term. But I think what we aren't prepared for is that really fraught in-between period where people really do tend to resent, or even, and you know, this is the great, we're talking about Australian terms here, aren't we?
Yeah.
this is where the great condemnation of being a wowser, of being of being too serious all the time comes in. And and again, I don't think we can quite jump straight from this kind of imposed politeness to normativity.
Well, we certainly don't jump straight from it. I'm interested in the responses to the DJs who were on commercial TV last night giving something of an apology. Keith Vaz, who is the MP in the area that the woman who has died, we think in a suicide, basically he was her MP and has spoken to the family, was speaking on Breakfast this morning right here on RN, and this is a bit of what he said.
To be frank, this is not an apology to them. This is an appearance on television in order to tell their side of the story. This is not an apology to the family. If it was an apology to the family, they would be getting on a plane and trying to come here, and somebody would come and apologise. They haven't sought to do that.
Really interesting approach to it, because there is the assumption that an apology is absolutely necessary, and I can understand emotionally why that would be the case. But just thinking about it philosophically or ethically for a moment, Scott, how direct do the consequences have to be of your actions before you are obliged to take responsibility? Can consequences be so remote and unforeseeable that ultimately you can, at least theoretically, absolve yourself of any blame?
One of the great philosophers of the last 300 years said, intentions do not matter morally one whit. And I think that's precisely right. When something that one has done has had a direct consequence on someone else's life, there is a blame to be had there, whether or not that was immediately foreseeable. It's part of what it means to live in relationship with other people and to embody those forms of moral responsibility that we're all born into. I do have to say, Waleed, though, without being too awful to the two DJs in question, we're talking about ritual here, aren't we? There was something somewhat ritualistic about what took place last night. There was a kind of outpouring of grief, the tears. Who I feel in many ways quite bad for are the DJs themselves, because that was whatever their desire, whatever guilt they may be feeling, and I've got full sympathy with that, they were thrust into the media lion's den last night by management in order, maybe it was to tell their story, but in certain their side of the story, but certainly it was also to effect a certain damage control here and to begin resurrecting something of the radio station's reputation.
I understand. Look, Scott, we're out of time. You're a good man. That's a text that come in, and it's always a pleasure to listen to you. I don't agree, but they do, and that's what matters. thank you for your services this year. We'll speak again next year.
So I look forward to it. Thanks.
Scott Stevens, editor of the ABC's Religion and Ethics Online portal. News up now.